civil society was highly developed, but now it's even bigger as a wave of help around here. A lot of ventures that are putting something like 10% of our income goes to the army, for example, or some humanitarian fund. It might sound crazy, but a lot of people now want to start a social venture.
Inside Impact.
Der Podcast mit Wirkung. Welcome back to Inside Impact, the podcast of the Social Entrepreneurship Center of WU Vienna. My name is Martin and I'm happy to welcome you to this episode. As you know, with our podcast, we're aiming to discuss issues revolving around social entrepreneurship. And today, we are starting a new focus. In the next episodes, we will explore how the war in Ukraine shapes civil society within the country, but also how international organizations aim to support. In our first episode, we're incredibly grateful and happy to welcome Artem Karnetsky. He is the co-founder and CEO of Kyiv-based School of Mindful Entrepreneurship and the Ukrainian Social Venture Funds. And together with his team, he also implements the local Social Impact Award. On January 26th, I had the honor to talk with Artem about the current situation of civil society in Ukraine. So I'm now sitting here digitally connected with Artem Karnetsky. Artem, thank you so much for joining us today. Could you very quickly and briefly introduce yourself and what you're doing?
Yeah. Hi, Martin. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm from Ukraine and I work to develop social entrepreneurship field here. And I work both in academia. So I work as an associate professor at Ukrainian Catholic University, but also I run an NGO, which is working in informal education. The NGO is called School of Mindful Entrepreneurship, School of Me in short. And we run different programs to support social entrepreneurs here.
Yeah, so you said prior to the interview that you're based in Kyiv. Of course, very important question, the most important one maybe right in the beginning. How are you currently doing?
Well, we had a massive missile attack today around Ukraine. We also had drone attack at night, and now we had this air raid siren for 4 hours plus, I guess. And I also heard some explosions nearby. So it's tough. The war is going on for almost a year right now, and it is different, but it wasn't easy since the beginning. But we keep positive.
That is great to hear, and a great way to deal, of course, with all of this. Now, of course, within our current focus here at Inside Impact, we want to focus on how is the civil society organizations, how is the sector doing in Ukraine with all of these terrible things happening. Could you give us a brief overview from your perspective? Of course, I suppose you cannot have all of the landscape in your mind here, but from your point of view, how are Ukraine's civil society organizations affected by the ongoing war?
Right. I believe civil society in Ukraine was highly developed even before the war started. And I am actually proud to be Ukrainian also because of that. But as someone working in education, I could tell you that probably after the war, we will have tons of case studies regarding how civil society organizations operated during the war. And what I see now is many, many organizations and people, not just organizations, united to work with the war and with the consequences of war. And probably you saw some examples of that when people were collecting money to support army or some initiatives. And it's millions of even euros, I would say, are getting gathered so quickly when we need to mobilize. But not just money, it's about people doing something. A lot of people are volunteering. A lot of organizations shifted their activities to work with some humanitarian help and to help other people, etc. So it's as I told you, civil society was highly developed, but now it's even bigger as a wave of help around here.
That is great. And you said, of course, many organizations very quickly needed to shift their operations also to, of course, deal with this new situation. Have you encountered any factors which enabled this also? Probably characteristics. You said, of course, Ukraine's civil society sector was highly developed even before. Were there any things you said, okay, wow, this surprised me that this worked that quickly?
I would say the mobilization of resources worked very fast after the war started. And of course, we received some help from abroad, and it's a lot of help, and we are very thankful for that. But you need not just receive it, but to work with it here on the ground, right? And there are many, many new organizations that started operations after the war started to work as humanitarian funds or NGOs, and those help IDPs mostly around Ukraine, because we have many, many of those people who have to move from their homes. And of course, they require a lot of help. And this is where those organizations, and it's not always an organization, sometimes it's just people who are willing to help. And yeah, as I told you, now it looks like a very, you know, very solid system of people and entities who are willing to help and doing that very, very effectively, I would say.
And you also mentioned, of course, the presence of international aid organizations. So, of course, countries, organizations from all around the world also want to support, of course. How do you feel that the presence of such organizations is shaping also the landscape currently?
You know, it's been almost a year since the full-scale war started. And what I see how they operate during the first couple of months, it was mostly chaotic. So they jumped in and they started to do something, which is also good. And we are lucky to have that help. But right now, during last months, I see that those humanitarian organizations started to build more systematic work, right? They started registering here in Ukraine. They started to hire more staff. They started to work on some, you know, documents and different tools to be more persistent, to be more flexible, right? And again, to be more effective. And that's what happens during a year, right? When you start doing something like a startup, it's also a kind of a startup, but in the humanitarian sector, right? And we have many of those startups. International ones, national ones, and what I see now, they are trying to build their activities in a more systematic and more, you know, more step-by-step way.
So basically a very, very quick but also very unstructured way of helping in the beginning. So really trying to get a foot on the ground kind of and see, okay, Where can we move with all of this? But now you see kind of also from the international organizations, something like building up structures, probably more standardization and professionalization kind
right,
of
right,
in
right.
this regard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How is this influencing local organizations which have been on the ground and present for a long time now? Is there something like, I don't know, maybe even something like a competition for workforce or something?
Of course, there are some limitations. I'm not sure about the workforce, but there is a problem, not maybe a problem, but a question of offices and places you have to work in, because we have many air raid alerts and many attacks. We have to create safety conditions to work, right? And that brings a lot of limitations you have to work with in order, again, to just operate. And that could be quite a problem in big cities like Kyiv, that we just don't have that many shelters, not just for organization, but even for people. I'm sorry. And that could maybe limit some activities. But in terms of people helping around, I'm not sure this is the big problem, actually. We also have a lot of people from abroad helping here, working in those NGOs and funds. But of course, most of those, I would say, are Ukrainians that just, again, mobilized. Some of them also shifted their activities and changed their jobs to be more helpful for the people here. So, yeah, I would say those limitations are mostly connected to not to the workforce, but to other conditions we have to deal with.
So rather logistical questions there.
Logistical. Yeah.
You said, of course, there is a lot of support there, also internationally, but also within the Ukrainian population, of course. What do you think is currently needed most to support organizations and maybe local organizations to give them the possibility to support?
That's a tough question. It's been a lot. What is going on right now, and I see so many activities, I see so much humanitarian help, which is very much needed, and probably we need more, but I'm not that sure that we can help more. Of course, many people are suffering, and of course, as you said before, a lot of people had to move inside Ukraine or even outside. But we have to work with the cause, not the consequence, right? To do something with that. It's the war which is causing that. And probably for now, I would say we need some other help to stop that. And those organizations are, of course, helping. And I'm not sure what are their requests right now in terms of finance or people, but to me it seems like they're doing a great job.
As you said, you're also highly active, of course, in the field, especially when it comes to non-formal education. Could you very quickly tell us a little bit about what you're doing with the School of the Mindful Entrepreneur, but also maybe how this led to you also? And this is something which might be new information for our listeners, to also implement the Social Impact Award actually in Ukraine.
Right. Yeah, thank you for the question. So at School of Me, it's a short name, School of Mindful Entrepreneurship, School of Me. So we aim to support people who are willing either to start, we call it mindful business, which includes different subtopics, including social entrepreneurship, but also we work with youth entrepreneurship and school entrepreneurship. So it's our term that we use to include different definitions in that. So we help people either to start such kind of business with impact, right? Or we have people who are already running this type of business to develop with different resources. And we run projects to do that. Most of those projects are funded by different donors. And one of those, it's not a project, it's a program, but it's SIA, right? Social Impact Award. It happens every year. And actually, we just started last year. So we had SIA in 2021 for the first time. And this year, we had another one. And of course, we have other projects with the goals quite similar to what I told you about our mission. We've been doing okay. I would say we were also thinking either we should shift what we do or should we stick to our mission. And on the other hand, we have this big need for humanitarian help, as I told before, right? But on the other hand, economics of Ukraine should work, right? And a lot of businesses also need help because they have to move, for example, for the regions where the war is actively happening. And part of those businesses are social ones, and we run projects to support them also. And it might sound crazy, but a lot of people now want to start a social venture because it's a great way to support, again, to support people, to help the situation, but also to be sustainable financially, right? And we realized that we probably should stick to our mission and to just to continue doing what we were doing. Of course, we changed something a little bit. Of course, it's mostly online, but we were ready for online because of the pandemic. But still, we decided that our mission is valid even now. And we had to pause for almost a month when the war started. But after that, we continued the operations. And yeah, as I told you, for example, we successfully ran SIA 22 this year, and we had even more teams than we had last year, which I'm very happy about.
You said, of course, that you needed to shift many of your educational programs and support, of course, online. But what is very interesting that many people also maybe as a consequence of this situation now would like to start a social venture, a social business. So have you encountered any other shifts? Of course, I think from topics, there's a big shift, I suppose, going on to humanitarian projects and stuff like this. Did you encounter any other shifts in this regard?
What I see now is sometimes not just us, but many nonprofit organizations and foundations working slower than needed for the business here in Ukraine. And in some, I won't say names, but in some of our projects, we had to, for example, wait several months until the grant, for example, to be confirmed. And that is not that so good in the situation we are having right now, because they don't know what will happen in a couple of months. And they, for example, they might need that money because they moved from Kherson to Kyiv, for example. But they can't work until they get that support. And I understand the processes there. I understand the bureaucracy, and I understand we have to be sure to whom we give that money and the due diligence processes, etc. But we are working on that, and that would be probably the biggest advice from me to those foundations and the international donors. Try to be more responsive, try to work faster right now, because this is highly, highly important for entrepreneurs to work. And their work, especially if it's a social venture, might be needed to other people, not just for the economy. So this point would be the speed of the processes. We shifted with that a lot. We are working faster now. And this is also very, very important for the entire sector, I would say.
And is this also a reason, because of course you now not only provide education and support in providing knowledge and sharing knowledge on entrepreneurship and social entrepreneurship, but you very recently also started the Social Venture Funds. And was this also kind of a reason that you saw, okay, big foundations are maybe not quick enough to really keep up with the speed of the situation developing?
Yeah, so yes and no. We were registering the fund before the war started, and we had a pilot running by my organization 2 years ago. So we were doing that anyway. But we also shifted how we operate right now in terms of the financial instrument the fund is using. So before the war, the fund aimed to support early stage social ventures. And the best instrument we thought would work here in our circumstances was a partially refundable grant. So we have other instruments here in Ukraine. For example, we have loans for social ventures, but those are for developed businesses. And we also had many grant programs, small grants just to start, to launch, which is good. But there was this gap when you received this first grant, and before you could apply for this big loan, you also might need some support. And we were checking the instruments that could work the best and come up with this partially refundable grants, which is a quite innovative tool for Ukraine. I didn't see that before we started to doing that. And we run the pilot, we confirmed that it works, but the war started, and we had some money in the fund already, and we are receiving more right now, and we shifted to traditional grants right now, because again, we want to do support in the most effective way, and that might be not the best solution to ask social ventures for some returns in these circumstances. So yeah, this is another type of shift we had to do because of the war, and it's not just us, other foundations also started to give more grant money with no return, and maybe easier report systems just to, you know, to help social ventures more.
I mean, this speed, this agility, do you think this might have played a role in people engaging stronger in social entrepreneurial activities? As you said, you have now many people who would like to start a social business, a social venture. Do you think this is also kind of caused by big nonprofit organizations not being able to react that quickly? So you said, okay, with a small startup like support system, I would be able to shift my activities quicker. I would be able to be more agile to respond to the situation.
You know, it depends on the geography in the first place. So there are some regions that are highly affected by war, and it's tough doing business there. But still, you could find a lot of enterprises on those territories. And also, I know that many donors, they don't want to go there. They don't want to support ventures there because it's a high risk. And by their policies, creating some opportunities to you know, to organize something to gather people could lead to some problems. And this is their logic. So it's been tough on those territories. And I mean, the Kherson region, I mean, Donetsk region, I mean, Zaporizhia region, Kharkiv region also, it's better now there, but still. And for the other regions that are not that affected, of course, we have those missile attacks everywhere, but still the life is very much different in those regions. I see the highest pace of businesses are opening and closing. So just on some streets around here where I live, some businesses were closed and opened, others were closed already and others were opened. So it's like high velocity. And again, it's happening very, very, very fast. And probably the risks for donors are also high in terms of that business to be successful in these circumstances. But I just admire people who are willing to start, who are willing to maybe not start, but to move the operations to other regions. That's great. Another important thing I wanted to mention is the request of those entrepreneurs we are receiving right now. One of the biggest one is how to enter the international market. Of course, it was on the table before the war, but now it's quite logical, right? But this is what we receive, and we had to find some experts to support those ventures. And of course, that happened within the projects we are running to support social entrepreneurs, acceleration programs, for example. And this is also some shift in operation and expertise we are going to conduct right now.
Really more actively also engaging in developing or recognizing international opportunities for ventures, basically. That is very interesting. Maybe to also make this connection, Inside Impact is a podcast hosted in Austria. Apart, of course, from doing what is possible to end this terrible attack also within the means of the European Union. From your perspective, how can Austrians or international listeners best support Ukrainian people at the moment? What could we do?
Yeah, first of all, you're doing a lot. All of the countries we receive help from are doing a lot, and we are very thankful for that. And it's not an easy question to answer what could be done more. And yeah, of course, I told you that we have to work with the reason of all of that in the first place. But what I can tell as a part of what I've been interacting with here, I would tell to support social ventures here. If you could find a social venture in Ukraine that is selling something, for example, in Austria or just abroad, you could buy something from them. That would be probably the biggest help in terms of the topic I've been working in. And yeah, as I told you, we have many support here, like grants and some money, but probably for most of those entrepreneurs, the biggest success right now would be to sell more. And this is how they see their mission, right? They want to be effective as a business to solve some social problem. Interesting point about that. I'm not sure, I don't have the data, but if you just go outside or you could order something online in Ukraine, man, it's a lot of ventures that are putting something like 10% of our income goes to the army, for example, or some humanitarian fund or whatever. It's actually a criteria of a social venture, right? But now it's been used a lot here. It's like many ventures. Most of them, I would say, are doing that in some way. They are either including that in the price of the good or service they're selling, or they're doing some donations, and they try to publish that. But yeah, it's crazy. If you go, for example, to have a massage for a private massage cabinet, you could see a sign that 10% of our income goes to Ukrainian army. Or, you go to the restaurant and there you could see 20% of our, menu. Or, for example, we have one dish and all the profits from that dish goes straight to the army or the foundation or some humanitarian fund, whatever. And this is quite awesome. They, of course, don't call themselves social ventures, most of them. Maybe they don't even know what is that, but still, it's a very cool story how the operations shifted here. And people who would like to buy something, of course, that motivates them to buy something from those businesses because they want to help. And yeah, getting back to your question, I just could repeat that one more time, that people from abroad could just look for some business or social business here in Ukraine, and maybe you need something that they sell, so you could just buy that and then support them and Ukraine both.
So really support the local organizations by also providing at least a little part of financial stability in this regard. Very interesting also what you said about just like regular enterprises or the regular hairdresser down the street, kind of also including now this social aspects because of this, of course, terrible attack. So it really led then to this also solidarity in a financial aspect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. I just could add that right now it works based on trust, of course, and that is great. And this is what we started with, right? The nation is united and we just have more trust inside Ukraine, which is great. And I think that after the war, it won't be like that. So we'll have to build a report system for all those activities, social activities, which is again a right approach to doing to do a social business, and that would be very much needed after this phase of war, after we will be in the more peaceful state. And that That would be another challenge, probably, to learn how to report and how to confirm those social activities.
So, and to really standardize and give it, yeah, a structured future, basically, what is happening right now. You also mentioned that international people from abroad and not from Ukraine can best support by supporting local businesses and also local social ventures, of course. Just very quickly asked, is there any register, any website we could have a look at, or do you have some organizations in mind which might be big social ventures in Ukraine?
Probably most of those ventures are now in the process of translation their websites into English. We have some catalogs of social ventures here. So the main website is called socialbusiness.in.ua. And there is a catalog there where you could find many social ventures. But what I see now is that they're trying to just go there on the market. And you could look for some stuff even on Instagram. So you could just search for a venture that is selling something you need on Instagram and just add Ukraine in the search. And you could probably find something right away. Also, we have some portfolio, for example, on the website of our fund. The fund is called Ukrainian Social Venture Fund, and there it's translated in English. And there you could find a portfolio of ventures we supported. And I think maybe not most of them, but many of them are working internationally. So you could find something that they sell, and probably you could buy something from there also.
That is great. Of course, to all of us listening to this episode right now, you can then find links to these catalogs and registers in the show notes. So you can also support the local organizations there. Artem, having a look at the time a little bit, thank you so much for providing your insights, also for describing the situation directly, basically from Kiev. Is there anything you would like to add, you would like to communicate to our listeners?
Probably I would just like to repeat once again that Ukraine is thankful for the help of the international community, but we didn't win yet, so we'll have to work more. And please continue, and we will work more here on the ground. And here in Ukraine, we are sure that we will win this soon. And if you could help, you can just pick a way that suits you the best, either to support some organizations that are working here, or buy something from a social venture, or support a local NGO, or support a humanitarian mission here. The way which is the most suitable for you would work, and together we could win, I'm sure.
As you might know, we at Inside Impact always have a very special ending to our episodes, as we are asking our interview guests for a book recommendation. We do this not depending on any topic of the interview or anything, just something which you might have come across, which you found interesting recently. Do you have such a recommendation for our listeners?
I have a book on my table, and I recommend it a lot. It's about social innovations, which is connected to the topic of our conversation. It's called Lean Impact by Anne May Cheng. And I like this book very much. It has a lot of tools you could use to develop social innovations around the world. And that would be my recommendation.
Again, of course, to our listeners, Artem's recommendation, Lean Impact, you can also find it then in the show notes to read a little bit more about this topic. Artem, once again, thank you. Thank you so much. Really wishing you all the best from Vienna to Kiev.
Thank you for the invitation. It was a pleasure talking to you, Martin.
Thank you very much also, of course, to you listening to this episode. If you want to stay in touch, you can do so via Instagram. Just look for Inside Impact with an underscore, or via insideimpact@wu.ac.at.
We're looking forward to welcoming you to our next episode soon. Until then, wishing you all the best from VU. Bye.